Welcome back to the Antidote Club podcast. It's good to have you with us again. I'm here with Gillian, and we have one of our favorite things, which is another client story for you today. And I'm super excited because it's one of my clients, and I worked with Rachel last year over quite a long period of time, which was great. And she was such a great client in terms of her story and, you know, the little things that kind of happened along the way. And I'm just so happy she said yes to coming on the podcast.
Yeah, it was really exciting to get to hear from one of your clients and the journey that she's been on from in the beginning when she tried the DIY approach, right? So I think maybe a lot of our listeners might really connect with that idea of kind of like spotting intuitive eating out in the distance or in those first kind of like, oh, what is this? And I think she'd read Megan Jane Crabb's book, right?
Yeah.
Body Positive Power, is that what it's called?
That's right.
Was her entryway into this and being like, oh, okay. And I think that's what's great about these people on social media who you know, have resources like books and podcasts and things where you can really feel like you're not really like buying into it or engaging in it or investing in it. You're just dipping your toe in because you're curious of like, oh, actually I can not diet and feel good in the body that I'm in. What the heck's that about? And it really sounded like she was in that for about 18 months of like,
yeah,
and then trying to do that work on her own. And what I found really interesting was like, what happened once she started working with you in compared to what wasn't really possible when she was doing it on her own and the big shifts that she made while working with you. So yeah, it felt great.
Yeah, it was really interesting. And I think it was interesting to have a client come to work with you who'd done such a lot of work, but still needed to kind of, you know, work through a lot of the body image stuff and, you know, really understand like, you know, what it means when intuitive eating is quote unquote working or not. That kind of stuff is really interesting because I think, you know, I did the same. It was such a similar journey. Mine was to hers when she came to me. That was the first book I read too.
And, yeah,
you know, there were so many similarities. And also, you know, she's got a mum of young kids, sort of similar ages to mine. And, you know, all that kind of stuff. They're slightly older than mine, but, you know, similar sort of dynamic. And it it's really it was really great working with her, but really great to hear her story again after such a little while since I, you know, we've worked together. So
she sounds like a real kind of ideal client of yours. Is she quite typical of the kind of people that you work with then?
She is. I think, I don't know whether it's because I'm a mum or not, but I don't think I've had a client who hasn't got young kids. And particularly daughters, I think that's sometimes the catalyst for starting this work, is you have young like kids, like daughters or preteens, and you know, and like she spoke about on the podcast, you know, she's got a son as well, and it matters to unpack some of this stuff for his sake. It isn't just about the daughters, but I find that that's quite often the catalyst of them starting this work. And I mean, and I guess it's the circles that I kind of network in and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, she was an ideal client insofar as that she turned up to the sessions like, this is my time to like, I want to understand this stuff. I want to understand why I feel like I'm getting it wrong. And I want this to be more than me just no longer going to the slimming club. It needs to be more than that, because I can see other people are getting more out of it than that. So when's my confidence going to come? Like, I've stopped dieting, like, where's it going to come? And that's what we helped to work through. And yeah, she's made some real shifts and changes.
It's so awesome. And particularly at the end to hear about how it's changed, like actually what's changed in her life, like where is she actually benefiting from this work. It's great to hear. So excited for our listeners to hear from Rachel. So let's head on over to the conversation. Welcome back to the Anti-Diet Club podcast. We are really happy today to have one of Tamsin's previous clients here, Rachel Botfield. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, happy to be here.
So we're excited to speak to you because you have been on quite a journey this past, I want to say maybe a couple years. With Food and Body staff. So you're here to share your story today. And I'm really curious as to where you were at when you reached out to Tamsin and decided this, I need some help with this.
Yeah. I had started looking at intuitive eating before I came across Tamsin. I think it was in a networking group and I saw her post something and I just thought, oh, I really need some help with this. I think it was towards the end of last year. So I think I bought the intuitive eating books like earlier on in the year. So I kind of like been looking at doing it and like working through the different exercises that were in there. Because I just reached that point where I just was just not having any more with diets and what I think with COVID as well, that I had a few stress things that were leading up to that and before and during COVID. And I think that you add a lot with a lot of people as well. You reach that point where you think, actually, no more, I can't do this anymore. And so I can't remember where I came across intuitive eating to begin with. I'd read Megan Jane Crabb's book, the Body Positive Power. Yeah. So I'd came across her. I'm not sure where I came. Maybe it was on Instagram. And I'd started with reading her book and that kind of, and then I had seen the anti-diet book with Christy Harrison as well.
So I kind of
dipped in and out of that as well. So I knew that it was like there. So I kind of, I suppose I dipped in and out for maybe 18 months, kind of coming to terms with like fighting that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like wanting to stop dieting and wanting to get into something to be free and then thinking, oh, how can I do that? And yeah, so I just kind of, I'm a bit of a nerd when it comes to something that I want to do. Like I love reading books.
Learning
about it. So I was, and once I started reading about it, really, it kind of opened that little crack in the door.
Yeah.
And then thought, actually, maybe it doesn't have to be like that.
Maybe it doesn't. Do you mind me asking, how long would you say your dieting career was leading up to that point? Were you a real hardcore dieter, or were you somebody that dabbled and just was generally unsatisfied, or were you a really committed dieter for a period of time?
I was a really committed dieter from when I had my kids. I kind of dabbled, I would say, prior to having the children. But I kind of think about it now and I obviously just didn't let it get to me, or I was too busy doing something else. But when I had the kids, that is when I felt the most pressure to diet, because I was like, oh my God, I'm the biggest I've ever been. And you get all these stuff about people snapping back to their bodies after they've had a baby. And yeah, so that was what I joined Slimming World and kind of went down that kind of route. And I was like a very committed, obsessed dieter. I don't think I have actually recently thought about sins, but I literally was, everything was like a calculator for like, how many sins is this? Mm-hmm. It was just like ridiculous. So I was always the person as well. Like when you talked about in some of your previous episodes about being that person that brings their own food and talks about like all the stuff around dieting, I was that person. I was always talking about food, thinking about food. I worked away at that point. I was working with my dad on events, and we would go away. And a lot of the ladies that worked with us were very thin, very beautiful. I felt quite especially after having the kids, I felt quite out of place. And we would all just obsessively talk about food and what we were having for lunch. And when, you know, we would travel to different places over Europe and stuff, like where can we go to supermarket to buy some stuff for lunch that's quote unquote healthy and not eat the Pringles and the whatever. And then ultimately we'd all end up binging on the Pringles and the biscuits that were there, because that's just what happens, isn't it? But yeah, so I was pretty committed.
Yeah. And I remember you saying to me, like, you know, thinking back to that time, but it was so normalized that nobody was like, what, you know, you were really committed, you were bringing, you know, doing all the stuff, going to the supermarket, bringing all your things to people's houses and stuff, like really like calculating every last thing all the time. Like you said, once you're on it, you're really like gonna do it the right way. But nobody says anything, do they? Nobody ever says, oh, well, you know, maybe you just cut yourself some slack. And then they're like, yeah, dig deep. Yeah, let's do it. Aren't you good? Yeah. You know?
What it was all about, and when I did lose weight, it was like, oh my God, how have you lost weight? Apart from the fact that pretty much all of these women were always pretty slim anyway, you know, like looking at it just mm-hmm. from a body perspective. Like we all were just obsessed with being thinner and making ourselves smaller. And it was like, I meant this one. Yeah. So it was just like, and it was like, well, how did you do that? I'm like, what are you doing now to like stop yourself from eating this? And how do you do it with having the kids and stuff? And then it's like, oh yeah, well, I'm really proud of myself because I managed to just be on this. But like I said to Tamsin before, like, I feel like I was on like juggling all this stuff or on this hamster wheel that like, it was not just with eating, it was like exercising and then all this stuff with work. And then if one little thing happened, it would like upset everything.
Yeah.
And then like,
you were totally
spattering the work.
Yeah, you were totally off the wagon in all areas.
Yeah.
Do you know what I was thinking when you were talking about going away with these like thinner women who are, you were all kind of bonding over diets? I'm like, do you know, no one rocks up to these things and just be like, this is a bunch of shit. Why are we doing this? To ourselves, what, like, that's not the conversation, right? And I'm thinking that even if one of you had rocked up with that, how much easier would it be for one of the women in a thin body to be coming, you know, into the conversation with that? There's a real expectation of people in bigger bodies to, even if they try and fail, which is 98% of us, right? There's still an expectation to always be trying.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because it's like, well, it was okay that I was bigger after I had the kids because I was doing,
you were performing.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. As soon as you stop kind of being the like good dieter, like the good, you know, person who's trying, you then, you know, everyone just assumes that you are not taking care of yourself. But actually, this is the problem, isn't it? We're pitching this stuff as taking care of ourselves when actually, you know, far from it. When you're in it, you know, nobody's realizing the lengths that you're going to and the extreme, you know, things that you were doing, and you have children around that you need to be, want to be taken care of. And actually that preoccupation with food can be so hard. And I would love to know, like, when you were in that, did you kind of feel that it was just you that was finding it difficult to like lose the weight, keep it off, do all that kind of stuff? Did you feel like everyone else was just kind of had this stuff figured out and that you were just still on this hamster wheel trying?
I suppose partly I did. Partly I felt like, because I think we often do anyway, don't we, like with, as women or as mothers, as workers, we always think that we're the only ones that are kind of going through that, and it is hard sometimes to see past what you're doing yourself. But I used to like, I mean, in hindsight now, the ladies that I was working with, they must have been doing that, you know, all the time. And they, the kind of work that they did, so they were doing a lot of hostess work. And it is so, you know, we just want the prettiest girls. We just want the thinnest girls. A lot of them had done a lot of motor show stuff when they were younger, where they were wearing like hot pants and stuff like that. I mean, that in itself is a problem. And they've obviously been made to...
Yeah, it's a requirement of the job.
Yeah. Although that wasn't when we were working with my dad, but I remember one time I wasn't picked for a job because I wasn't quote unquote blonde and thin enough, which really, really upset me. That was like before I had the kids though. And I guess I found it easier to brush off then. But they must have been going through similar things, but I think it's just because it's so normalized that you don't, like, I didn't, it's only kind of looking at intuitive eating and doing the work that I've done with you, Tamsin, and like now discovering all the, what is out there and like looking at my own biases as well, that you realize it's not fucking normal to do all that stuff. And when I was in it, I thought it was so normal. Mm-hmm. And I find it hard to talk about with people that still kind of ingrained in diet culture, even though they might not be like hardcore dieting like I was, there's still that element where, but I still have to be smaller and thinner. There's still that thread that's attached to it that we're not kind of good enough.
Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking there when you were talking about not being picked for that job, and Tamsin asked the question, like, did you feel like it was just you going through all of this? And I'm guessing that you've kind of moved from this place of like at that point in time not being picked, feeling like I'm the problem, I'm not thin and blonde, and this is on me, to now waking up to the idea that no, actually, the fact that only thin blonde women get picked for these jobs is actually the problem. It's switching around this, I talk about this all the time, that this isn't a problem that lives within us. It's a cultural problem that is then infuses through our minds and into our bodies, right? Mm-hmm. Could you tell me then a bit about, so you kind of came across intuitive eating, you started learning, you started reading some books, you went through this like maybe 18-month period of like being curious and dipping your toe into it. And I think that's how most people start, right? It's like, what do you mean this thing of accepting my body? Like, that sounds so great, but at the same time, like, I'm super skeptical. What was the kind of tipping point? Like, I understand you started to try and practice intuitive eating on your own and trying to find some peace and relaxation in your body, but there must have been something in you that felt like you weren't quite making the progress that you'd hoped to make, or you weren't quite feeling as differently as you would like to have felt, and that's why you engaged with working with Tamsin. What was that kind of, could you just speak to that sort of part of your journey?
Yeah, I think that I think it was the body acceptance, really. I think I was still not as much kind of in a bit of a binge restrict cycle that I had got myself into, and more severely before COVID and before I discovered like intuitive eating. But I just was like, I just felt like, why? Because I was in a bigger body than I have been before, and I'm still incredibly privileged with that, but that was the bit that I couldn't kind of get over, like, why I'm trying to start doing this stuff. I mean, there was a part, and I know you guys have talked about this before, like, oh, when I do intuitive eating, I am obviously not going to eat any chocolate because I'm just going to eat what my body wants. My body's obviously going to want to have stuff that isn't chocolate or stuff that isn't quote unquote good for me or bad for me or whatever. So that was like a harder bit to get over, and like trying not to make it into a diet with intuitive eating. But yeah, I think it was mainly the body acceptance. I think that I was so inspired by listening to and reading about other people's stories, and it sounded so wonderful and freeing that I was like, why can't I just get round to feeling that part? And that was why I reached out to Tamsin.
When you were going through like those stages, when, you know, remember a couple of points when we were going through like body acceptance and like, you know, clothing changes and stuff, how did you find that process? Like,
and that was when we were looking at the stages of grief, wasn't it? Looking at the different things there. And that was quite hard, actually, because I got quite a lot of different clothes from, and you know, when some, you know, certain clothes mean certain things to you as well, don't they, from the event that you might have worn it to. And then there was part of me that was sad that, like, I'm never going to wear this again, or I'm never going to fit into it. And then like looking at, well, why is it sad, like, and getting over that, accepting it, and like we talked about, my own fat phobia in myself is that, you know, that's why I'm sad, is because I'm not smaller anymore. But then I don't want to be sad because I'm not smaller anymore, because that's like that's not what I want to feel like. So it was quite a hard process, and I did get quite upset in some of those stages. Mm-hmm. But I think as well, you kind of think of it as it's, you're going to, I'm going to do this, it's going to heal myself, tick, and then I'm going to be fine. There's not going to be any other work or days where I feel like that. And that's not the case, obviously, as you know. Mm-hmm. But I think that it's really helped me just come to terms with things and be kinder to myself in those ways and know that that it is more of a, I don't want to say journey because that sounds like too like, oh, I'm on a big journey, but you know what I mean, like it is a journey though. but yeah, so that kind of that it does get easier, and once you start addressing those things and being really honest with yourself about like why, because you helped me look at there was some tools to kind of like sit in your feelings as well that we did, and those are really really helpful to do that, because you tend to, or I tend to, you know, like push those away or you know, and it's I don't want to say enlightening, but it kind of is enlightening that you sit in with those self, and instead of, because that's kind of what you did for years of diet culture, isn't it, you spend that time pushing all those other feelings, ignoring yourself really, and just going by all these other cues of people telling you what you should or shouldn't be doing and what you should look like and things like that as well. So
yeah, and I think Jill and I was talking about this morning before we came onto the podcast about, you know, I tend to work a lot with mums because I am a mum, and I think, you know, that I think the universe kind of puts me together with other mums who need help with this stuff. But I think it's very typical of us to be putting other people first, because we are having, it's not that, I'm not saying it's something exclusive only to mums, but I think there's another layer of it. It's just like, you really just aren't your own. Your body's not your own. It's very kind of, it can be really, you know, unsettling, you know, when you're going through that stage, like understanding, like these people rely on you and you've suddenly thrown into this world and you're even more so putting other people first, and it's expected of us. I think it's just so normalized, isn't it? That actually it's really unusual to be sitting with our own feelings and asking ourselves what we want. Again, we were talking about food a lot, weren't we, about like, well, what is it you like to eat? I mean, I think we started there, right? With what is it you want in the house, you know, what is it Rachel wants? And you know, like talking about,
I still
about,
think
like,
that when I go shopping, I'm like, right, what do I really want? And then sometimes I do surprise myself with things that I wanted before that, and I think, well, I can just go and buy anything now. What can I buy? And then actually, it's like there's like not that much, because it's the restriction thing. I found that, I'm not saying I never eat chocolate, because that's a complete lie, and I'm like knee deep in mince pies at the moment because they're like my favorite thing in the world. But it doesn't make me feel guilty anymore, and it just makes me think, actually, I've got some food here that I really want to eat, instead of like, you know, eating whatever the kids have got and only buying it for the kids and then eating it anyway, even though actually I'd rather eat something else than eat their Haribo or whatever.
Yeah, so much of the time our food doesn't actually radically change that much, right? It's just how we feel about it changes, and that makes such a huge difference to our well-being and our mental health. What struck me when I heard you speaking about your process and your journey is, it sounds to me like before you started working with Tamsin, you kind of was learning a lot of the kind of intellectual mechanics around like the guidance around intuitive eating. But the things that you named when you started working with Tamsin sounded to me like really confronting stuff, like looking at grief, looking at processing emotions, looking at buying bigger clothes. Honestly, I'm not sure that those are the things when people are going through this on their own and doing the DIY approach. It's really, really hard to do that difficult stuff when you're doing it on your own, because it's just like, well, I can close the book, I can turn off the podcast, I can walk away from this when it gets too hard. And to have somebody to go through that process with and to sit with and be confronted with, and I'm sure there was a lot of tears and a lot of, you know, laughing and all of it comes out. But does that sound right, that you maybe went to more difficult places that have maybe shifted the needle in a bigger way through working with Tamsin than what might have happened on your own?
Yeah, definitely. I wouldn't have approached, well, I wouldn't have approached it the same way because I wouldn't have thought about some of those things to do. You're right, I would have carried on with following the book, you know, and possibly ended up turning it more into a diet without even thinking about it, really, like saying about wanting to, oh, I shouldn't want to eat that, I shouldn't want to eat this. And we talked about that, didn't we, when I first started. I think that it has been really valuable having somebody guide you and having that teasing things out that you wouldn't have thought of. I've, you know, it is really important. I think like I've done some CBT this past year as well, to help with some of the stress and anxiety, you know, other things. And that's like built on what I did with Tamsin in terms of looking, like how I'm feeling and sitting in what I am feeling. So a lot of that was crossing over, I think, with like the body acceptance and what I was doing in terms of like eating and how I was feeling myself, because it kind of like stressing as well. But I think Tamsin helped me build that foundation for going forward and doing the CBT, because I don't know whether I would have done the CBT had I not been doing some work on myself, if you will, because it always feels a bit like, you know, and I'm privileged enough to be able to have had worked enough to get the money to be able to pay for that, because I pay for CBT privately as well. But I don't know whether I would have just done that before, because even though everyone says it's okay to get help and all of this, it's like, oh, and I've kind of changed my tune on that, I think, having had this help and found it so valuable for me to do, because I just don't think I would have done it on my own. I think I still would have been stuck without having somebody help me. And because you can kind of consume all the content you want, but it's putting into practice is the hardest part. Even though it sounds really simple, that is the hardest part. And I think having somebody there really, really helps. And obviously, you know, Tamsin's experience, and you've got all the exercises that we did, and the like talking about grief. I wouldn't have been able to name that had you not, you know, talked about it and showed me and said about this. And actually, I would not have been able to name that as that. So I think that having that extra support, if you can, is going to be really valuable
And
for
I
you.
remember you coming to the sessions, and we first started working together, and you said, like, this is my time. This is my hour for myself to invest in myself to, you know, get to where I wanted to be when you'd obviously started that journey for a reason, to free yourself from all that stuff. But you showed up with every session ready to absorb, ready to talk about stuff, and ready to let it out. And, you know, like actually prioritizing that as time for you rather
Yeah,
than.
because it felt like I was being selfish, like, should I spend this money on and do that? And it's like, actually, yes, because like you talked about, we don't always prioritize ourselves generally anyway, if we're and it's I find that kind of hard to think, oh no, I'll be fine, do all this. And then actually I was reaching the point where thinking, no, actually, I'm not gonna be fine. I think it's just gonna make it worse.
But you know, I'm not a parent, right? So I'm largely making this up. But I would imagine when we think about, you know, not wanting to prioritize ourselves because kids are always needing our time and our money, and the attention should go to them. And we're kind of indoctrinated into putting ourselves second as being the kind of caregivers rather than the care receivers. But I'm thinking as I'm listening to you talk, like the 1 hour a week or fortnight or whatever it was, and then the money associated with that, which might be, you know, a pair of trainers for one of your kids or something. When you actually think about truthfully what's going to make a difference in their lives, right? From a really holistic point of view, if you take 10 steps back and think what is going to influence their lives more positively, it surely is going to be a parent who feels more embodied, more comfortable in themselves, who has a healthy relationship with food, who can model self-care for themselves and personal growth in themselves. Like, that is such a great role model. And to have a parent who has done that work, ultimately it has to benefit them in so many ways, in ways that you maybe isn't tangible. It's not the same as like seeing something like, oh, I've signed them up for swimming lessons or something. It's not as tangible as that. But what you do is you start to change the culture within your household. And that's really, really invaluable. I think it's really underestimated. So, you know, and I say that and I'm kind of like, there's also part of me that's like, and also you shouldn't have to justify it. And here I am justifying it, right?
Yeah.
But if we are looking for a justification, I think there's a really good one there.
Yeah, I agree. And that is something that worried me as well. I've got a son and a daughter, and worrying about, like, they still call baby bells mummy cheese because I used to eat them as my snack, my baby bell, like, they call it mummy cheese. And I was like, oh, my mummy's having her little snack. I was like, oh, this is just awful. And we lived off beans. My son can't even eat beans anymore. So he was spending so many beans on Slimming World. He's like, can't eat beans anymore. And I just, and they're going through, you know, they're at that tween age in middle school and going through body changes and things with friends, and I don't want to put that, have all the shit that goes with, you know, how bodies should look and everything, that I don't want them to do that. Especially, I thought it'd just be my daughter, but my son, you know, he struggles with some self-esteem things, and he's, you know, and it's the same. I can see him struggling as well, and I want to set a good example in that way to not make them feel those extra pressures. Mm-hmm. Because I mean, they are going to reach a point at some age where I can't protect them or stop mm-hmm. them from consuming all of that. Lily's really aware with her friends of being, talking about being yourself, like, she's really, they're all really big on that, which I think is really lovely. But Max does, he struggles with that. And I bought the Body Happy Kids. I haven't read all of it yet, but so did you say you bought it for your teacher?
I bought it for several teachers. It's an end of year present that I give the gift of.
I love it.
And I actually had a teacher thank me for that. I had a teacher saying, you gave me that book. And we never really kind of discussed it any further than that. But at least she acknowledged that I bought it for her. But
you had the teacher on, which I love.
I feel like I'm writing down all these book recommendations because we always, every episode, we turn it into like a little bit of a book recommendation.
Yeah, we need to recommend that book. But you're totally right, Rachel. Like, you know, I think so often we talk about how girls and women are affected by patriarchy, but actually patriarchy doesn't work for the majority of men either, right? I mean, arguably not for any of them, but they suffer from it too, right? The way that we are conditioned to believe that our role in society is X, they're similarly conditioned to believe their role in society is Y, and that's mm-hmm. not helpful for them either. So I definitely think it's like a cross gender problem that we're dealing with, and I think that book does a really good job in helping.
It's just so hard to see that the things that they coming up against school, it's the same stuff that happened when I was a kid, like, you know, this is like 30 years ago when I was in school and their age, and I just think, oh, haven't people grown since then? Surely opinion should have changed by now, and then you're still coming up against the same stuff, and it's just really frustrating
because these systems of oppression are still at play, and that's what's filtering down into mm-hmm. any of the stuff that we're talking about. And just to kind of, you know, go on to that point again about boys is, you know, we need to be also letting them see, like, not letting them have, you know, seeing that they can have a healthy relationship with their own body, but also to see that everyone around them, girls, boys, everybody, is bodies change, you know, and it doesn't matter if yours doesn't change, it other people's might, and that's okay. And like mm-hmm. understanding that, I think that's really super important. But it's all part of the same systems that are just
And no. to your kind of point, Rachel, about all these, like, why hasn't that changed? If you look at statistics around other kind of marginalized identities and the oppression and discrimination and stigma that's associated with homophobia, for instance, for racism, all those numbers are going down over the, you said like 30 years, if you look across that period, the numbers are going down in terms of how people are affected by this. Fat phobia is going up. It's the only like marginalized identity that is still going up when the others are going down. So that, you know, it kind of sticks in my throat a bit when I think about that and repeat that, but that is the truth. So as much as I feel like there's a really big shift happening, there's still so much to be done. So, and it does start with younger generation, right? So I have another question that I'm keen to kind of follow up with. So Rachel, you really eloquently described how this work that you've done on your own and then with Tamsin has really made some shifts in your household and how you raise your kids. But I'm really keen to understand how it's affected your life in other areas. So maybe you mentioned that you have your own business. So maybe there or in your other relationships or friendship groups, like what's this work done for you in those areas?
It's been really great for my business in terms of showing up more and showing up more as myself. So I wanted to get some brand photos done, and I did end up doing that in the summer. I met a lovely lady and she was big on making you feel comfortable and kind of like getting you out in front of the camera. But I wouldn't have been able to do that had I not kind of like started this, like doing the work that I did with Tamsin, just because I was too scared to have them done and thought, what if I don't like the photos and I spent all this money, or I don't want to put them up online and what are people going to think, and you know, all those things associated with not liking our photographs. And I was really, really surprised. I absolutely loved my photos. I could not have had some better photos done, and I really feel like they kind of capture me. And I know I've had some really good feedback from people saying that they think that they look like me, like I'm doing some, you know, podcast moves on my hands and things like that. But I really, and they've really helped my website to personalize it and so that I can show people like who I am. And yeah, it's really helped my website because I'm able to put pictures of, instead of just kind of using the stock photos, I can put photos of me on there to show like who I am and in my business, which I really feel much better about my website now. And I try to, and I use them in my social media posts as well, which is really great. So I don't have to kind of keep trying to take some selfies or use the same self thing. And it's helped me show up on video as well. I do some little videos and I do some of them without makeup, and because that's generally how I am mostly day to day. And it was a bit of a barrier for me. So I still kind of like stopped and started, but because I feel more, because I am more accepting of myself and how I am. And I've just decided to just do them anyway, because, otherwise, I just wouldn't end up doing them if I'm still waiting for, oh, let's just do my hair or do my makeup or something like that. So I just thought it has really helped me to do that, because I wouldn't have done that before. I would have been too afraid to. I'd have just, you know, done a typed post. So, yeah. It's helped me be more confident in doing some networking. I went to an event last night and I was talking with a lady there that was saying about how she struggles to show up on video without like worries about her makeup and how she looks and things. And I was just kind of like talking to her about how I just do it now, and she was saying, oh, that's really amazing and I wish I could do that. And it did made me, and I brought up that I'd work with you, Tamsin, and brought up the work that I have done. And she seemed really like receptive to that, and something that she hadn't thought about before. And I just, I think there are a lot of women out there that struggle to show up in their business for fear of being judged of what they look like or they sound like. And I think part of that is how you judge yourself as well. And I think that because I've done that work, I mean, it is ongoing, you know, I don't...
Worse.
You know, every day, you know, there are some days I record the video about 5 or 6 times. I'm like, no. But... I think that because I have challenged those thoughts and my own biases, that has helped me kind of get over, like we talked about before, like shifted the needle in my change of thought. And there are, I do find that I talk about, I don't like bring up food or dieting like with my friends or anything, but I know that like one of my friends is getting married and there was a lot of kind of talk about that leading up to her wedding. But I know that part of her doesn't want to care, but then it does care. But so that was a bit hard, I think. But on the most part, because when I was doing the dieting, I was very vocal about it, talked about it all the time, and feel like I was a bit of a nause when it came to it, you know. And then
we all feel like that. I was, yeah, for sure.
So now I don't want to, although I feel it's very important, and if somebody kind of, and I'm a bit more confident in saying more what I think now, like a bit more down the line. I don't want to push this on because I know that potentially when I was still in that position, I wouldn't have had any of it from somebody else because I was so, you know, stuck in exactly what I was doing. But, you know, if somebody is saying, you know, getting upset about putting on weight or worrying about the eating, and I just, you know, try and say, you don't need to worry. We don't have to, it doesn't have to be like this kind of like, but more in a positive, you know, just try and
compassionate
help
them. Way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rather than trying to educate people who are maybe not ready for that anti-diet message, like the full works.
Yeah.
I think we've all been at that point where we've, you know, wanted so badly to sort of share this work and the freedom and the things that you, all the things that you feel when you kind of, you know, get further along in the journey, not out the other side, because we always talk about there is no real end, but we just want to tell people, but you know, you don't have to do this, you don't have, it doesn't have to be this way, and I know you're pretending it's easy and I know that it's not for you, but we know that it backfires so often, doesn't it, like when we kind of venture down that road. Yeah.
It sounds like you've really been on, to use your words, quite a journey. And it is ongoing. And I think I really want to thank you for coming and sharing your story, because I know that our listeners love our client stories. They love to understand what people's processes have been like. And I think it does encourage people to hear that, you know, I was in your position and this is what was scary, and this is what I tried, and this is what didn't work, and here we are. So thank you so much for your time, and we'll put all the links to everything that we've mentioned in the show notes.
Thank you. Thank you for being so generous.
I just can't recommend you enough, Tamsin, about the help that you've given me. So, and I'm really glad that I discovered you, and you as well, Gillian, and the podcast, because it gives me that boost on the days where I'm feeling on the harder days. Just put on an episode and listen to you guys talking, and it always helps me kind of like recenter and think, actually, I feel better going forward. So thank you very much.
Yeah, that's really good to know, because that's what it's so here nice. For, isn't it?
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Rachel. Bye.